Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Mike O'Brien. Mike was recently the vice president of aerospace and government at Synopsys. He has over 40 years of experience in the semiconductor, software, and computer industries. In his 27 years in EDA and IP at Synopsys and Cadence, Mike helped build new lines of business, including outsourced design services, research collaborations, and government-focused verticals. Currently, Mike is part of a team working for the U.S. Department of Commerce that will play a key role to implement the CHIPS and Science Act's historic investments in the semiconductor industry. He joined us in March for an overview of how the program is managing funding for manufacturing and R&D. He will now give us an update on the progress that has been made since March. Welcome back to the podcast, Mike.
Daniel, thank you for having me back. It's great to be here. Yeah, so since we talked in March, there's just been a ton of activity and a number of announcements. We've proposed $28 billion in direct funding or grants and nearly $24 billion in loans to leading edge companies like Intel, TSMC, Samsung, and Micron. And that's really driving, you know, sort of historic levels of investment in the U.S. because that funding is really dwarfed by, you know, the funding that the companies themselves are putting forward. You know, recently the Semiconductor Industry Association released a report saying that America's on track to triple its domestic semiconductor manufacturing capacity from 2022, when the CHIPS and Science Act was enacted, to 2032, so over a decade. And there are some reports that, you know, are sort of cataloging that the amount of semiconductor investment in 2024 in the U.S. like exceeds what's happened over the prior 20 years. So there's a ton of work going on. And another sort of key finding of the SAA report is that we think we should be on track to have leading edge logic, DRAM memory, analog, advanced packaging, you know, really grown in the U.S. and the capacity for advanced logic, where we have none today, to 28% by 2032. So, you know, a lot of new capabilities at the leading edge. And I think these are, you know, I think why these announcements are so consequential for our country, the scale, right? The sort of total and private investment from the four leading edge companies will equal roughly $300 billion between now and the end of the decade. So again, just, you know, orders of magnitude higher than what we've done over the last couple of decades, and far and away the most investment in new production in the history of the U.S. semiconductor industry. I think the other really important thing to note is the diversity. It's Intel, it's TSMC, it's Samsung, it's Micron. We now have four of the five global leading edge semiconductor companies in the world aggressively expanding on our shores. And the fifth one, SK Hynix, has just announced a major investment in Indiana for advanced packaging. So no other economy in the world has, you know, more than two of these companies producing leading edge chips on its shores. I think, and from a technology perspective, these investments will bring really leading edge technology to the U.S. Intel, TSMC, and Samsung will all be producing some variation on their 2-nanometer technology, with the most advanced nodes that are, you know, sort of on a path to commercialization. And Micron will produce, you know, the most advanced memory technologies in the world, including the high bandwidth memories that are so critical for AI.
Interesting. So Mike, what about mature companies? What about the mature process nodes? Can you talk a little bit about how those programs are different and who you're working with?
Yeah, so you sort of allude to, right, the whole ecosystem is important. It's not just the leading edge. And we have focused certainly a lot of the initial announcements on them, but there's been quite a bit happening in sort of what, you know, current and mature specialty technologies, compound semiconductors. So this is so important because, you know, for example, during COVID, you know, it was legacy chip shortages, right, that effectively shut down the auto industry for a while. So we are focused on the whole ecosystem and really ensuring a supply chain that's resilient, that includes foundries, packaging, equipment suppliers, materials, gases, chemicals. And I think one of the things that we've seen is the leading edge companies, you know, are a magnet for suppliers. They want to be, you know, close to their big customers. So those investments are drawing companies. And then we have targeted investments, right, that can sort of increase the number of overseas suppliers investing in the U.S. I'll talk about that a little bit. But just, you know, for example, because of TSMC's investment in Arizona, you know, over 14 suppliers have moved to the U.S. In that region or other parts of the U.S. So in terms of some of these other sorts of investments that we're making, here's just a list of companies that we've got preliminary terms agreed to and announcements made. BA Systems, so up in New Hampshire for aerospace and defense. You know, Global Foundries is expanding their operations in both New York and Vermont. Microchip is expanding in Colorado and Oregon. Polar in Minnesota, they're expanding, and they all serve, you know, key markets like the auto industry, like defense, and industrial markets. And then Obsolix in Georgia is an innovator in glass substrates, which are critical for advanced packaging. So, you know, they're expanding their operation in Georgia. Within the last week or two, we announced Rocket Lab. Their subsidiary Solera will expand their production of compound semiconductors for space-grade solar cells, which is important for international defense, satellites, and spacecrafts. And I think the other parts of the, you know, the packaging, again, is just really important. So, you know, Samsung and Intel are also part of their funding projects are investing in advanced packaging projects because of the proposed CHIPS funding. So that gives you sort of a sense of what's sort of happening. And the non-leading edge, front-end wafer manufacturing, there's a ton of focus and energy there as well.
Wow, that's an incredible amount of progress. That's impressive. Well, one other topic that I'd like to touch on is the shortage of engineering talent. You know, that's the top of the mind for many people. What are we doing in regards to that, in regards to deployment of technologies such as AI? What is your organization doing with universities to help with this engineering talent shortage?
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly a challenge for the United States. It's a challenge, frankly, for every place where there's semiconductor manufacturing going on. It's not unique to the U.S. But I think, you know, the companies won't invest if they don't think they can build the workforce that they need. And I think they really understand that in order to effectively operate these complex fabs, they need to do things, they really need to invest and lean in and do things differently. I think they recognize the U.S. has a great, you know, university system. So workforce here is a real asset amongst the best in the world. And I think what I have seen, you know, going to conferences and is just the amount of alignment between industry, universities, state and local government, the federal government, all towards how do we get, you know, more technicians trained to operate equipment, to be really proficient at the sort of, you know, steam fitting and electrical work that's required in a fab, and then all the sort of engineering programs. And we're really seeing some progress be made from all these efforts at all levels of government and universities and in industry. There's a report from SIA and Oxford Economics recently that talked about applications from students for full-time jobs and internship opportunities in the semiconductor field were up 70% and 163% respectively compared to other industries. Yeah, so I think there's just a ton of interest, Dan, and a ton of work going on, you know, at all levels to try to grow the workforce.
Yeah, you know, I go to all the conferences and they're coming fast and furious again, you know, since the pandemic. And it's filled with young people. I mean, I'm very encouraged. Mm-hmm. And the universities are participating in these conferences in a very aggressive manner. But beyond university work, what else is going on in the area of workforce development?
Well, so I say, I think the companies are really leaning in too. So, and what we've tried to do is like every leading edge company that we've announced preliminary terms with, the Intel, Micron, Samsung, TSMC, we've dedicated workforce funding of $40 million or more. And here are some sort of examples that those companies are investing that money in. So Intel's engaging with three major Arizona universities, Arizona State, University of Arizona, and Northern Arizona University, to support and align the needs of students, workforce development through university research programs, internships, collaborating and providing resources around the curriculum development. TSMC has a fairly aggressive team sort of actively collaborating with university engineering programs around the country. And then they're partnering with local community colleges and other technical education programs to develop the skills for a career in manufacturing at TSMC and the expanding, you know, semiconductor industry in the U.S. Another example, Micron has formed partnerships with local community colleges, universities like Syracuse University and Onondaga Community College. Those are in New York. And then the College of Western Idaho and Boise State in Idaho. And this is all to sort of recruit and train for both manufacturing and engineering workforce. So, you know, that's an example of where, you know, our program is putting specific money aside to really help these companies do even more to develop the workforce that's needed. And then the other thing I would say is these funds will go to awardees. They're working with local sort of workforce education training and community-based organizations to create solutions that are sort of customized for the company's needs, and that sort of match up with the sort of labor dynamics in that particular region. And I'd also say we really are trying to target these investments for projects in regions or clusters where multiple semiconductor manufacturers exist and are co-located, and really try to catalyze additional private investment to build regional workforce development capacity that can support workers, you know, in the industry in the long run. I guess the other thing, maybe another sort of a couple of points, examples, you know, there's a Fresh Start, which is a foundation chartered with Empowering Women. They partnered with Intel and Mesa Community College to develop a free semiconductor manufacturing workforce development initiative to increase the number of female technicians in Arizona. And we know there's at least one single mother in Arizona who was unemployed with a background in software development. She enrolled in this program, graduated, and received a job from Intel. And then there are other examples where some veterans programs have put together free 12-week certificate programs really focused on manufacturing, and those graduates are then able to apply for and secure jobs in the manufacturing sector.
That's really good news. You know, but Mike, one of the challenges with the semiconductor supply chain is it's composed of a multinational ecosystem, right? I mean, how is your organization reaching across borders to work with other governments?
Well, it's real important because, as you say, Daniel, semiconductor supply chains, you know, are global. They're going to remain global. So international collaboration is critical to our collective success. You know, Secretary Raimondo's made clear that our goal for these manufacturing investments is to support a healthy global semiconductor ecosystem that's resilient and drives innovation. So as we've stood up this program, the department has appreciated input and cooperation with our partners and allies. And we're gonna keep working with them to ensure that our strategies are aligned to advance our collective economic and national security. Companies have made it clear they wanna invest in the US for the same reasons they always have. We have world-class universities, a large-scale workforce, abundant land, clean and expensive energy, really good environment for business. But we know that companies will be diversifying their footprints. So we are coordinating with allies and partners to ensure that when companies invest outside the U.S., hopefully they're doing it in countries that share our values. And then through bilateral and multilateral dialogues, business-to-business, government-to-government business forums, the department is working closely with like-minded, you know, countries, partners to strengthen and diversify the global semiconductor supply chain. So this means, you know, we've been engaging with allies to share projected supply and demand forecasts, you know, across nodes, you know, different types of technology nodes. We've tried to increase transparency about planned government incentives and could coordinate them all in the name of avoiding, you know, kind of competition and, you know, working together to achieve the shared goal of enhancing supply chain resiliency. So that's something that we recognize was really important at the outset of the program and something that we're continuing to really pay attention to.
Well, that's good to hear. Great progress. So Mike, final question. Between the $39 billion for semiconductor manufacturing, the $11 billion for semiconductor R&D, and the 25% tax credit, there are a lot of resources left to deploy. What do you see as the most impactful over the next 6 months or so?
Well, I think over the next 6 months or so, we're working very, very hard to finalize agreements for the $39 billion in manufacturing incentives, right? So I think we're off to a really fast and great start. We need to get them all sort of finalized and get that allocated so all the benefits will come, right? And this includes leading edge, includes kind of mature, and all the work we're doing in the supply chain as well. And then during that same time period, the CHIPS R&D office, the $11 billion that you mentioned, they're making, you know, I think really great progress on programs that are part of that part of the CHIPS for America Act. So the National Semiconductor Technology Center, the NSTC, they're expecting to invest more than $5 billion over the next decade. They've stood up already their operator, NADCAST, And you're going to see, I think a series of announcements from them over the next couple of quarters about the facilities and the projects that they're going to be funding. Also part of that $11 billion is $3 billion for National Advanced Packaging Manufacturing Program, or NAPMP for short. And this is to research advanced semiconductor packaging. And, you know, they've already announced a funding opportunity of up to $300 million for advanced packaging substrates and materials. Concept papers for this were received in April, and requests for applications are due in July. In May, the department also issued a notice of funding opportunity for approximately $285 million in funds for a CHIPS Manufacturing USA Institute that'll be focused on digital twins. And they're going to start to receive concept papers over the next month. And then there's been over $100 million in, targeted for different metrology projects. So those are all in flight. And Dan, as you know, R&D is essential to sustain leadership in semiconductors. Just look at the value being generated by AI in terms of companies' valuations, and then the impact on productivity that's going to have on virtually, you know, every industry. That's all enabled by semiconductor R&D investments over, you know, many years, and leading edge silicon and advanced GPU architectures, design tools, advanced packaging with high bandwidth memory. So the future really is about, you know, not just transistor scaling. It shows how logic and memory have to become more integrated to drive higher performance, lower power. So, you know, the CHIPS R&D, along with industry, and I think our world-class research labs and universities, will really have an opportunity to create that future. And then I'm glad you mentioned the ITC, the 25% investment tax credit. This is a huge incentive. Our direct grants are, you know, targeted for meritorious projects to be 5 to 15% of the CapEx. The ITC is 25. And companies that invest in qualified facilities, start construction before the end of 2026, are eligible for that. You know, so as long as the projects start before then. So this is a really important, you know, meaningful ongoing incentive that should maintain the momentum that we built, you know, built up since the passage of the bill, you know, 2 years ago. Yeah, and I guess the other thing, you know, in terms of impact and what's happening, remind your listeners, encourage them to go to chips.gov. They can get more information on the programs that I've talked about, and, you know, subscribe to the mailing list so they can be aware of future progress. I think that's probably what I have to say. We have a lot of work to do over the next 6 months, Daniel.
Yeah, that's a great update, Mike. I appreciate it. I am on the newsletter. I do get the updates, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again. Let us know when you're ready for another update, and we'll chat again.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks a whole lot, Daniel. It's always a pleasure catching up with you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.